After Hurricane Katrina hit, I felt a little reluctant to talk about the many wonderful memories I have of New Orleans. At that particular moment, talking about all those good times felt like the sort of thing you'd do at a wake, as if the object of those memories was gone and never coming back. But when it comes to New Orleans, who can possibly imagine an America that doesn't have the Big Easy sitting down there near the mouth of the Big Muddy? So I will pause to reflect on some favorite moments from my favorite American city. Perhaps we all should. Maybe that's just another way to ensure the recovery of a place we can't afford to lose. I'm Jeff Hoyt. Welcome to Hoytus Interruptus.
Do I have horses in a line? Do I have horses in a line? Do I have horses in a line? Carry to my burial ground. Some may say this might be your last farewell ride. Some may say this might be your last farewell ride.
I've often joked that New Orleans has been the site of some of the most wonderful single moments of my life, a few of which I can actually remember. And while overindulgence has played a role during all those trips to New Orleans, remembering what I saw and felt there has never been a problem. I mean, how can you forget the unforgettable? On my last trip to the Big Easy, I happened upon my first New Orleans jazz funeral. On the way to the cemetery, there was the horse-drawn hearse, a funeral dirge, and a grand marshal in a black tuxedo with white gloves, slowly leading a procession of mourners. Then, on the way back from the cemetery, the brass band kicked in, the colorful umbrellas unfolded, and a big-time celebration was up and running in high style. Someone explained to me that all the family and friends walking and dancing behind the band were part of what's called the second line, and they soon saw their numbers increase as others who could hear the band approaching in the distance would fall in behind and join the celebration, led, of course, by that very same Grand Marshal. No more Mr. Glum for him, though. Now he was like a drum major, strutting his stuff down the middle of the street. It was like he was sending a signal loud and clear to everyone in the community that another soul was headed home. One can only hope that at least some of those who lost their lives to Hurricane Katrina can somehow be sent off one day soon in similarly grand fashion. My wife and I rang in the 1980s from a second-floor wrought iron balcony overlooking Bourbon Street in the French Quarter. The balcony was packed, and we had little hope of finding a spot with a view. But just a few minutes before midnight, a huge group just headed indoors for some reason, leaving Cindy and I right there at the rail on the corner of Bourbon and Toulouse, champagne in hand and a spectacular vista over thousands of party-crazed revelers on the streets below. We were counting down the final seconds of the 1970s. It was pure magic. Having been married only a couple of years and in possession of very little money for travel, New Orleans was our Europe. It was close, it was affordable, and it was exotic. Our New Year's trip was our first time to New Orleans, but we knew before the end of day one that it would most certainly not be our last. First and foremost was the food. At that age, I'd not yet learned how to really savor a meal the way I should. But New Orleans cuisine demands that you stop charging through your food and chew very slowly, because whatever you select from the menu is going to take its sweet time unveiling all of the flavors it has to offer. From the muffaladas at Central Grocery to the blackened snapper at Commander's Palace and everything in between and beyond, it seemed that every dining experience in New Orleans had us moaning like we were in some bad X-rated movie. 2 years later, we returned to New Orleans for our first and only Mardi Gras. We have countless memories from that trip, but the whole week can be summarized by one moment. On Fat Tuesday, somewhere just off Jackson Square, we heard a big bass drum in the street. Within seconds, people were on their balconies, beating on whatever they had. Pots, pans, shakers, you name it. Musicians seemed to come from nowhere. Then a conga line formed, and the whole crowd was in full dance party mode. Cindy and I just looked at each other and smiled. It was joyous, and a moment we'll never forget. Another memorable moment in New Orleans was getting to see my only favorite team from any sport achieve ultimate glory. I was in the Louisiana Superdome to see my Chicago Bears win Super Bowl XX. And all I had to do to get there was pretend that I was a car salesman. A friend of a friend had won a national sales incentive through his Chevrolet dealership, but his wife was due to give birth right around game time, so he couldn't go. But since there was only one winner per state, he knew that nobody would notice if he sold the trip to someone who could convincingly play the role of him and his wife. Desperate to return to my favorite city on the planet to see the Bears play in the Super Bowl, I assured him that Cindy and I were up to the task, even though you could take everything I knew about cars and fit it into a retractable cup holder. We arrived in the Big Easy by chartered jet, and for 4 days prior to the game, we lived the high life, attending cocktail parties and lavish dinners at five-star restaurants, while all the time wearing our David and Laura name tags. If a slightly inebriated Chevrolet car salesman would bring up business and ask how many units my dealership sold during third quarter, I'd just say, "Hey, I'm here to have a good time. Let's not talk shop, okay?" Then, at the earliest possible moment, Cindy and I would escape to the comfort of the familiar, the streets, the sounds, and the spirit of New Orleans. In the end, though, I'm just a tourist. No different from thousands of others who have visited the Big Easy and love it there, but can't possibly really know this amazing city of celebrations. We can't know New Orleans like the Crystal Goblet guy. He's entertained people for years outside Brennan's restaurant with his tabletop of partially filled crystal goblets. He'd work the rims of the goblets with moistened fingers and fill the morning air with hauntingly beautiful music. We can't know New Orleans like Kid Comic. When I met him, he was just 8 years old, tap dancing his heart out like so many other kids in the quarter. Kid Comic, though, would set himself apart by suddenly stopping to tell a scathingly funny joke. Then he'd start tapping all over again, using the sound as a kind of rim shot. And we can't know New Orleans like the shrimp lady, who saw me walking alone down Dauphine Street one evening and practically ordered me inside to try a Creole shrimp concoction that she guaranteed I'd love or she'd double my money back. From the very first bite, I knew that she'd be keeping the money. Here's hoping that all three of them escaped Katrina safely, and that no matter where they are now or where they may wind up in the future, that they'll one day come home to an even better world than the one they left behind. That's it for this edition of Hoytus Interruptus. Thanks for taking the time. I'm Jeff Hoyt. Well,